Alright, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And Psychic Tom Padgett.
And we got the first show in a long time, so we got a whole lot of stuff to catch up on. A lot of MMA cards to talk about, a lot of boxing matches, a couple big heavyweight fights. We're going to wait till our other buddy, Tony the Tornado, gets online to talk mostly about the boxing stuff. But Tom, we got not only a lot of MMA to talk about, but a lot of upsets. Going back to Don Cerrone getting beaten by Mr. Till there. All the way up.
You know, a lot of folks seen that one coming.
Right.
Till is quite the monster, and looking forward to the showdown with him and Wonderboy. But Cowboy, three losses in a row. See where he goes.
We also had, of course, GSP's comeback last week, which was headlining a totally stacked card, and a lot of stuff went down there. Obviously, George St. Pierre had a successful comeback, but it wasn't without some pitfalls. Got his face cut open pretty good, and really just got the rear naked choke in the nick of time. And saved himself from having the fight stopped because it was probably going to bleed into his eyes for most of the fight. So he would think that they would stop it if it got too bad. But George didn't let that happen and took the title from Bisping in classic style. And of course, Bisping admittedly said, yeah, he got the best of me, choked me out. What can I say? So George is now actually contractually obligated, according to him, to fight Robert Whittaker next. So.
You know, Rich, just as an aside, I don't know if I can say that's the best UFC card ever, because that's a stretch to say that.
Right.
But it has to be one of the most memorable cards, and definitely, right, if not number one, right toward the top. How often do you see three belts change hands?
Right.
And every other fight on the card was just mind-boggling. I mean, everything just came together.
And I'm very glad I was not still in Vegas and had a chance to put money on this card, because I got 2 out of 3 of those title fights wrong. Of course, I liked Cody Garbrandt against TJ Dillashaw, and he did have a little bit of promise here and there, but TJ just had a little something extra, and he just didn't lose any steam going into the second round, and I think in some ways he got lucky, but in other ways, Cody just fell victim to that one-hand low technique, and he had sharp defense in the beginning, but he just let it get the best of him when he was just stalking TJ a little too much, and obviously going just for the knockout, and TJ was just doing a little bit more dynamic stuff.
Yeah, someone had posted, you know, if the first round would have been 15 seconds longer, that would have been the end of the fight. But then again, if the first round would have started 15 seconds earlier, you know, we're getting on that tick. That was fascinating. But it did look like TJ was in a bit of trouble at the end of that first round, no doubt.
Right.
But he was in shape, and major congratulations to his corner with Bang Ludwig to get him back on track, and he came back out and turned it around. So I guess the feud will continue between Team Alpha Male and TJ. So now this sets up a lot of possibilities. Dominic Cruz, I guess, is going to be fighting Jimmy, the man away from New Jersey. Can't think of his name offhand, but I guess, you know, he's going to be fighting him next, and assuming he gets past him, then we're setting up a rematch with TJ, so it's ought to be interesting.
Yes, sir, and I like the idea of a rematch for this one, too. I'm sure Cody's going to earn it at some point, if not right away, but
sure. I think we've got an interesting triangle right there at the top where styles make fights.
It was definitely a slugfest, and there was a little bit of strategy in there, but it was you know, a lot of back and forth. And TJ surprised me a little bit. His game has improved somewhat, but you know, both of them had some good technique at certain points and were landing some really good shots. And it is what it is. Cody just basically got frustrated because he could not land his best shots. And I think that tired him out more than anything, because he was still throwing them, even though he knew he couldn't find his range or get close enough. And he just spent a lot of time stalking instead of letting TJ do the running around.
You know, this gets back on the mental approach to this. And you wonder if Cody was just so psyched up for this,
yeah,
that he had a little too much. Because if you notice something, the three defending champions had done most of the trash talk.
Right.
I would say in the women's fight, the champ did virtually all of the talk, let alone the trash talk.
Right.
And then if you look at the middleweight fight, Michael Bisping doing most of the trash talk. George really didn't want to go down there. But it's just fascinating how this shook out.
Right.
That it seems like the people that came in there just punching a time clock seemed to be able to think a little clearer on this. But personalities, of course. Then again, you put all three of them in the next time around, the results can be the exact opposite.
Yes, sir. And the thing that surprised me the most about that Rose Namajunas win over Joanna was just how dominant Rose was, and explosive and fast and powerful. And Joanna actually claimed after the fact that she did not tap. But she also said she was out and does not disagree with the ref stoppage. It's kind of weird. Because, you
can't
know,
have it both ways. And really, when it comes down to that, a tap is a tap.
Right. And, well, her explanation is the funniest part, because she is trying to claim, no, that can't be. I couldn't have tapped. I didn't tap. I think that was me just trying to stand up, trying to get balance.
What's that old cliche about the Nile, not a river or something? But, I don't know if she's seen the video.
I think she has seen it.
There is a time when you need to just be quiet and stop digging yourself deeper into a hole. And I'll tell you what, Michael Bisping has his critics, but I don't think you could find a more sportsmanlike approach than when he was at that post-fight press conference.
I didn't see that.
What a hell of a man. I mean, he's had my respect for a long time, and he hasn't even won. He knows how to win, and he knows how to lose graciously.
Yes, sir. And, of course, that wasn't the only action of the night. We also had some other earlier fights worth mentioning. We had the Stephen Thompson, Wonder Boy himself, beating Jorge Masvidal, which I thought would be a better fight. But sometimes Thompson's style just dominates. It's just got that... I mean, he didn't really beat the crap out of Jorge Masvidal, but he was just able to control the action, basically. And,
right. I just think he led the dance.
Basically.
And first round was fairly close, but then it just seems like Thompson had his rhythm, and you cannot let him get into that rhythm. And Jorge didn't seem hurt, but he just couldn't seem to close the gap.
And he was not fighting like a guy who was down on the scorecards in the third round either. He was
spent. I wonder about that, if he just felt that he was just that old cliche, a day late and a dollar short. He was just off. I mean, yeah. Thompson was just in that groove, and sometimes you're almost afraid to do anything offensively. You know, it's not going to land.
Right.
You know, which is a terrible predicament to be in, but I think he had to know. He really had to turn it up. But sometimes knowing is one thing, doing it something else. And Thompson, this really puts the welterweights in the whole division's quite a dilemma right now.
Right.
Because I don't think there's much clamoring for a third fight with Wonderboy and Woodley.
No.
At all. And yet, if Wonderboy cleans out the division, well, that's where it's going to lead to. So this will be interesting with Wonderboy taking on Darren Till, and that's going to be a free fight on Fox Sports 1 coming up early next year. How that goes.
And
how about the opening fight?
Johnny Hendricks getting TKO'd?
How about that?
Paulo Henrique Costa, just a guy that basically got in the way of Johnny Hendricks trying to reinvent himself. Yes, went down by punches in the second round, 1 minute and 23 seconds.
Rich, did you watch any of the embedded?
No.
The embedded episodes. Okay, well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the fighters get there a few days early, and then they're, you know, they have to go through the motions of signing the posters and all that. Well, they interviewed Johnny there just to ask him how'd it go, pretty tough camp, and he just seemed almost like going through the motions. Just not the same guy that he was. Because you remember, just go back a few short years with George's last fight. Johnny Hendricks was on top of the world back then. I mean, his power was devastating. It just everything was clicking for him. And I got the vibe from watching that he looked like almost a man on the gallows.
Right.
Like it was just something, and I don't know if it's some kind of situation he has going outside of the cage. This is a very different person now. And I just looked at him there and just said, well, this is probably, he's being fed to the sharks. And he was fighting a shark, that's for sure. Now, to give him credit, he went down swinging, but he did go down. I mean, he did try to grab the leg there, but I don't think there's any controversy about the stoppage.
I don't know.
I mean, he's changed camps. He changed camps again. I guess he worked at Jackson's for this fight. And it's not like he doesn't know how to train and get in shape. Something is terribly amiss. And maybe it's, you know, I don't like to give anyone advice, but he's got to think of where it's going now.
Yeah. We also had James Vick doing pretty well with his career in the UFC, being kind of a mid-range fighter. He beat Joseph Duffy by TKO as well, also in the second round, but with just 1 second left in the round. So, good job there by him. That was a pretty decent fight. We also had Mark Godbeer getting DQ'd for, get this, a kick to the head after the referee paused the fight due to a low blow against Walt Harris.
Yeah, that was... how about that name? Godbeer.
Right?
You know, we got one of our former fighters place, Jim, and we had a hole in it. We were getting a laugh out of that. What a cool name. But yeah, what a way to win.
And what would a GSP card be without an OSP on it?
Yeah.
Ovince St. Preux was also fighting against Corey Anderson, and he got the win by a head kick as well, but it wasn't a disqualifying head kick.
It was
1 minute and 25 seconds into the third round. I didn't get to see that one or any of the preliminaries, really. But we also have Randy Brown beating Mickey Gall by unanimous decision. Curtis Blades beating Alexei Olenek by doctor stoppage in the second round. And then Ricardo Lucas Ramos beating Ayman Zahabi by spinning back elbow. And I believe Zahabi is one of the relatives of GSP's coach. They were talking about that. One of his cousins or something like that. So, back to the drawing board for him. Spinning back elbow, too, was the knockout. It was pretty brutal. I did see that because they kept showing it. But anyway, we're going to connect to Tony real quick here, hopefully. Anyway, while we're waiting, we also had Bellator 186 Friday before the... big UFC 217. And in that one, Ryan Bader pretty much handled Linton Vassell. He looked way improved since his fight with Phil Davis. But that was a snooze fest. But this one, Bader just plowed through him. Good stuff.
Yeah, he did what he had to do. I think with Ryan Bader, there's nothing super fancy, but he gets the job done.
Right.
And when his wrestling game is working, I mean, he's got a great ground and pound. And you know, there was some sort of squawking. Well, he's not evolving, or so. Well, he's got the belt and he defended it.
Right.
And I think he fought smart. Again, why would he stand up and give Vassell the best chance to knock him out? So good for him.
Yep. Let's see what else we have on that card. Alema Leigh McFarlane beat Emily Ducote on that card by verbal submission from a triangle armbar, which was pretty interesting. that was in the fifth round too, so a lot of brutality before that. Emily was doing pretty bad in the beginning, but Alema Leigh McFarlane just kind of fell asleep in the middle of the fight and then came back and got the armbar. We also had Phil Davis beating Leo Lighty by unanimous decision. That wasn't too thrilling, but Ed Ruth provided a little more action with the second round TKO over Chris Dempsey. And boy, that guy fell down like a sack of potatoes.
yeah, you gotta give Chris Dempsey all the props for showing up, having a lot of guts, but you kind of knew where that one was going at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the Ruth has really evolved to stand up, that's for sure. And Phil Davis too. I mean, it was, again, not the most exciting fight, but you could tell Phil's working hard on his stand-up game.
Okay.
And again, I think a very smart tactical fight, because you kind of knew with Leo. Kind of knew with Leo, his best chance would be getting the fight to the ground. And
Phil didn't. All right. Going down the list, we also had Syed Awad have a pretty easy win over Zach Freeman. That was a TKO in the first round. Seven into that one. Not a lot of other stuff worth mentioning on this card. It was a big card, though. That being 14 fights total. And we've got Fight Night coming up. One more to recap, though. Fight Night 118. Of course, the aforementioned Donald Cerrone. And you couldn't call it an upset, I guess, because the other guy was undefeated. Is it Darren Till? And I didn't get to watch any of the fights on this card. For some reason, the Poland time slot got away from me there. So I don't know. Did you get to see that one, Tom?
That was with our former guest on there, Heather.
Heather Hardy. Oh, I did see some of it then.
Ugly night for her. You know,
No, that was the Bellator one.
Yeah, go ahead?
That was the Bellator one. I was talking about UFC Fight Night 118.
Oh, no, I thought you meant the Bellator card.
But yeah, that's worth mentioning anyway. Yeah, Heather Hardy versus another girl who was undefeated in kickboxing, I believe, before she got into Bellator. And talk about a disappointing defense for an ex-boxer. I mean, Heather basically got her nose smashed off her face because she had her hands out to her sides the whole time. No defense to the face whatsoever. It was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that was, and you know, and the problem is, very seldom in MMA have we seen that taekwondo. I mean, these were like taekwondo kicks this girl was landing. Talking spinning back kicks and crescent kicks. You know, just obscure stuff that really hasn't panned out too well. But I think it exasperated Heather's lack of the ground game, because after the first round, it just kind of is axiomatic. If it's not working on the feet, this is MMA. You are able to take it to the ground, and I know it's easier said than done, but it almost looked to me like that was the farthest thing from Heather's mind.
Right.
And I know in her MMA debut on Bellator, she was putting on a clinic on the feet, but I was kind of hoping that she would have went to the ground just to get acclimated a little bit, and it couldn't have, maybe it wouldn't have won the fight for her, this last one, but it sure wouldn't have hurt, because I don't know what this other, I don't know what her opponent had, you know, for ground experience, but it just seems like Heather was either incapable of getting it down or just was not occurring to her to even try, because she didn't even seem to make an attempt. So if she's going to stick with MMA, she's got a lot of evolution to do with her game, that's for sure. That was about as bad of a nose break as I've seen.
Yeah, totally.
And I have one I kept myself. I know. That is, that ain't going to heal too quick.
No.
So she's, and I was even yelling at the television, Heather, the ground, shoot in, set something up, get it down.
Mm-hmm.
But
still there, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, thought you were breaking up there. Yeah, I don't have that card right in front of me, but it was a pretty bad one for her. That was the one fight that I remembered from it. And it's just so disappointing because, you know, she's there to kind of represent the sport of boxing. And, you know, I've always been saying that these MMA fighters don't have good hands. But I guess you can say that she was really, this was her first fight in MMA, her opponent. So
yes.
Technically, it's not a reflection on MMA being so good, it's a reflection on kickboxing being better than boxing.
Well, and again, it just, if I was in Heather's corner, I would have emphasized that, I mean, hopefully Heather's been working on her ground game.
Right.
And I don't know if you've seen the fight, but there was just not even the thing that really bothers me when I see a bum rush. You know, it's in Damian Myers, some of you know, we'll get on that in a minute too. But you know, when you start bum rushing, that's a recipe for disaster because it's out of desperation. But at least try.
Right. We also have UFC Fight Night 120 to preview. Dustin Poirier versus Anthony Pettis. Poirier has a 21-5 record going in against Pettis, who is 20-6. And at one point looked really to be the greatest fighter of his weight class there, and looked pretty dominant back in the days when he had that epic battle with the other Henderson from Bellator now.
This is a fascinating fight on a couple levels, because you look at Poirier and he's good. He has no weaknesses, really no glaring weaknesses, but it seems like when he gets to that top, you know, in that top five, in that rarefied air there, he has a setback. And this is another chance, and I think if he comes up short, it's going to be tough for him. But then you look at Pettis, and again, he's another one that 4 or 5 years ago, he was just on top of the world. He was pretty much unbeatable.
Right.
And then had a setback, and then all the weight issues. Now he said he's much more comfortable at 155, and Poirier went through the same thing. Dropped down to 145. That didn't work out, so they've got their weight. But again, a setback for Pettis here would be devastating, because it seems like he's on his way back, but it's going to be interesting to see this one.
Right. A lot of interesting names on this card. A lot of big-time, old-school veterans. Matt Brown versus Diego Sanchez is a hell of a co-main event for this one. You know both of these guys are going to bring it. And they're very versatile. it's also kind of a loser-leaves-town kind of type of atmosphere, you got to think, because they've had some skids here and there.
Brown was interviewed, I don't know if you caught UFC tonight, but he said this... he thinks it's his retirement fight, but then again, he says never say never. And I think what he means by that is if he really looks good and dominates, and UFC gives him a nice offer, he may stick around a little bit longer. But this is supposedly his retirement fight, I mean, especially if he loses.
Right. Andrei Arlovsky is back, 25-15, fighting Junior Albini, who's 14-2. Arlovsky had a fight a while back, maybe a couple years ago now, where he threw these just regular back fists, and I thought that was such a clever technique. I got into throwing them myself on the and practicing, you know, hitting the bag and all that stuff, and I really got to like it. And then he just stopped doing it. It's like he didn't switch camps or anything. He's still with Albuquerque with Jackson and Wink. So I don't get it. He just abandoned the technique that was working like butter for him. But he's gonna face a guy that's looks like he's kind of new to the UFC. I haven't heard of him, but he's got a heck of a record, 14-2.
Well, I would say they're the kind of the same thing. If Arlovski comes up short again, I think that will definitely put him into the trial horse category. Because so far, just in his last few fights, his chin has just not been there.
Right.
And once that goes, it's really tough.
And then we have Nate Marquardt, 35-18-2 is his record, fighting Cesar Ferreira, who I believe won the Brazilian episode of one of the Ultimate Fighter seasons there. He is 11-6, so obviously young up-and-comer versus old-school veteran. We'll see how that works out.
hard to believe Marquardt's still fighting.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's been around forever.
Been around. That's not the only guy who's been around on this card. We also got Rafael Asensio, who is 25-5, fighting Matthew Lopez, another young up-and-comer. 10-1 is his record. And then you've got veteran versus veteran. Clay Guida versus Joe Lauzon. I don't know. Is this a rematch? Have these guys fought before? It's almost hard to believe they haven't.
Yeah, I think so, but this was and also an interesting one. I mean, you'd have to think that it just blows on off the top of my head. But
I guess they haven't fought. I don't see him on his record. So anyway, they call him J-Lau. Joe Lauzon, but. Hasn't been really star quality. He's way down in the middle of this card. He had a heck of a fight where he gassed out in his last time in the cage, April 22nd, 2017. Had a great first round and then just got demolished throughout the rest of the fight and lost a majority decision to Stephen Ray there. Before that, he beat Marcin Held back in January of this year. By a split decision, and then before that, he had that split decision loss to Jim Miller in a real battle. And he beat Diego Sanchez back in July of 2016 in a TKO back in the first round. So he's been up and down.
Careers go up and down. Diego Sanchez was he had an early peak, and boy, he was the hottest thing back then. Right after the first season of the show, Ultimate Fighter. And, that was then and this is now, huh?
Right. That's not the only action either. We've got John Dodson way down on the card for some reason, 19-8, fighting Marlon Moraes, who's 18-5-1. That should be an interesting fight, especially with DJ talking about moving up in weight classes now that he's broken the record, which is another thing we didn't get to talk about, I don't think. Ray Borg going down to Demetrius, or maybe we did. Maybe that was the last show. But, that's could be some title implications in that one if he does step up, or even if he doesn't. Then we got a couple undefeated females. Tatiana Suarez, 4-0, fighting Vivian Pereira, who is 13-0. And we've got Sage Northcutt, a little aside to talk about Sage in a minute, but he is 8-2, fighting another guy who's 8-2, Michael Quinones. And then we got Angela Hill, another Ultimate Fighter girl, 7-3, fighting Nina Ansaroff, who's 7-5. Court McGee, old school Ultimate Fighter, he is 18-6, fighting Sean Strickland, who's 18-2. And then the second fight of the night, Marcel Fortuna, 9-2, versus Jake Collier, 10-4. And then the first fight of the night is 5-0 Carl Roberson versus Darren Stewart, who's 7-1. So it's a pretty decent card for a free fight night from Norfolk, Virginia, actually. So looking forward to this one for sure. And just looking at Clay's record for shits and giggles, 33-17. His last fight was June of this year. Chiesa versus Lee was the card. He got a unanimous decision over Eric Koch. And before that, he lost two in a row. So he was in jeopardy of three in a row there. Guillotine choke in the first round against Thiago Tavares back in November of 2015. Then he didn't come back till June 4th of 2016 and got KO'd by a knee in the third round against Brian Ortega. I'm looking forward to that one. Then we got UFC 118, like I mentioned before, a bunch of times, but we didn't really get to go through all the results. The main event there, of course, Donald Cerrone got TKO'd in the very first round, which is a big surprise to a lot of people. That was 4 minutes and 20 seconds into it. Sure, dog will load. I'll tell you what happened in the rest of the fights.
Yeah, I'm not shocked about the outcome, but I am surprised about the first round. Normally, Cowboy is around a lot longer. He never lost three in a row before.
Right.
So you kind of wonder if everything's catching up to him.
Awesome.
But Darren Till is not a cheap date, believe me.
Right.
I mean, you do a little bit of detective work on him, and a lot of people were predicting the upset.
Another story while we're waiting. I don't know the guy's name offhand, but it was a Texas event, which is kind of a shady place for commissions, because if you remember the debacle with Kimbo Slice fighting in Texas two times in a row before he died, due to complications that are probably partially linked to steroid usage, and the first time I believe it was a 30-day suspension or a 90-day suspension. But
well,
it was,
that's just, you know, the first thing I think of is the Cole dynasty, you know, in the boxing world. So
this time around in Texas, a guy actually died, similar to Dada Harris. He had a heart failure and kidney failure inside the ring, inside the cage, and they had to basically revive him right there on the spot. And needless to say, he has decided not to fight again. But literally almost lost his life in the cage. And it was close. It was very close. They had a very tense situation inside the cage and got him revived.
I didn't really follow up on the news. Did he blame his lack of preparation for his near-death experience?
I believe he had some issues with the weight cut. Weight cut was number one concern, I guess. But
you know, this is, just as an aside, this is such a serious endeavor. If you're going to get into it, make darn sure everything is going according to plan, as best as possible. And that doesn't mean losing 30 pounds in 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, and that brings up another story, too, about The Ultimate Fighter. I have been catching up on that, and had a little drama last night with Sajara Eubanks, who is the number 12 seed, and she went in there and fought a number 8 seed, and second time in a row she got on paper upset. But before the fight, she was very close in weight. I think she was like 10 pounds over just a few days out from the fight. So she had a real tough weight cut, and then she had like 3/4 of a pound to go with an hour to make it. And of course, a couple of the other girls decide, oh, we're going to get into the sauna first because it looks like she's having problems making weight. So we're going to try to make weight to take her spot, you know, because it's alternate time if she doesn't make weight. So the girl that was already having problems with the other team, Sajara's team, Lauren Murphy, who basically switched teams because she didn't like Eddie Alvarez, she goes and gets herself not only in the sauna, but on a bike in the sauna and in the sweatsuit. And Sajara goes in there after trying some towels over her. She goes into the sauna and, of course, flips out. Tells everybody to get the fuck out. Lauren tries to explain herself, and she still says, get out. So she got everybody got out, and she did make weight. And she wins the fight by really a surprising result, too, because she was kind of getting outclassed by her opponent until she landed a beautiful head kick. Didn't even seem that hard, but just the right angle, just the right connection on the temple, and her opponent was out cold. And, yeah, you hate to laugh at people in that situation, but it was kind of crazy to, kind of, not hilarious, but kind of funny when, I think it was, Big John was reffing the fight, and, the girl tried to get up off her back, being all woozy, and she goes, is it over? Yes, he said, it's over. But yeah, that's a tough loss. Tough loss. And then we also had, on the same episode, a girl I met out in Worcester one time at an event that was put on by Butterbean, Eric Esch. She actually got slammed in a loss to another girl who was on the same season as the first time she was on The Ultimate Fighter, Roxanne Modafferi. Real first-class girl, very positive attitude, and apparently she's way improved. She's the first seed in this competition, and she took out her opponent. So I don't have her name in front of me, but talk about a stellar attitude in losing. I mean, that girl was on cloud nine. Just happy to have the experience, and just giddy, and it was almost like she was relieved that she wasn't having to continue through such a brutal tournament. She probably had some injuries, and it was probably rough for her, but it was just very surprising to see somebody in such high spirits after a loss. But obviously, she's convinced she can learn something from it and is not too bent out of shape about it. So anyway, back to Darren Till versus Donald Cerrone. Till goes to 16-0-1. Cerrone falls to 32-10 there. The co-main event there was Carolina Kowalkiewicz getting another win over Jody Esquibel by unanimous decision. We also had Jan Blachowicz beating Devin Clark by rear naked choke in the second round. Oscar Picota beating Jonathan Wilson by unanimous decision. Martine Held beating Nasrat Hakparast. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That was by unanimous decision. Brian Kelleher beating Damian Stasiak by TKO with 339 seconds. Well, 339 seconds into the third round. TKO. Ramazan Emeyev beat Sam Alvey, another former guest of ours. Had a tough couple fights by unanimous decision loss. Andre Feely beating Artem Lobov by unanimous decision. Not a big surprise there. I've been a big critic of Lobov's lack of defense. Fighting like a zombie sometimes because his hands are so low and he's getting popped. Third fight of the night, Worley Alves beats Salim Tulhari by unanimous decision. Second fight, Aspen Ladd beat Lana Landsberg by TKO punches in the second round. Josh Emmett beat Felipe Arantes by unanimous decision in the first fight of the night. I think that's about it. Oh, another big story. I did catch on SureDog today. Rampage Jackson has signed a new contract with Bellator. So we will see him fight again.
And he's clamoring for Nick Diaz. Have you heard the what caused that mess?
No.
Okay, Diaz was pretty drunk. You know, everything's recorded now. I'm glad I'm not in public, not out in public too much. But everything's recorded. So Diaz runs into Rampage in Las Vegas, and Rampage had his girlfriend with him. And Diaz came up, put his arm around Rampage's girlfriend, and tried to steal his girlfriend right there on the street. Like, what did this guy for? So, and I think Diaz really did hit the boost. So then it escalated into some words, and it started to get, there's probably a video of it somewhere. If you try YouTube, it's probably still on there. but I guess I got everything separated, so now Rampage is calling Diaz out. Of course, the problem is Diaz, you know, who knows if he's even going to fight again.
Right.
I mean, it's been,
yeah, I don't think he will.
Quite a while. And I understand he's doing pretty good in other non-fighting things.
Right.
So, you know, with his weight situation, then I've even heard a rumor that some of these clubs in Las Vegas are just paying him to show up.
So, there you go. Not a bad gig if you can get it, I guess, unless you really end up with a problem with alcohol because of it. It could be the problem that's keeping him out of trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, it looks like he's put on a bit of weight. And, you know, him and his brother did triathlons.
Right.
They were known for that. That's where that insane cardio comes from. And both times I've seen Nick, and he was at a marijuana, I don't know, almost like a convention or something. He was smoking right at the table. And he looked baked. You know, one of those, wow. it's kind of sad that the brothers aren't getting back into it, though, because the UFC's really, really needed what happened last Saturday night.
Yeah.
Really needed that, because right now, Brock Lesnar's gone, Ronda's gone, Conor, who knows what he's going to do.
Right.
And it's just personalities really make the show. I mean, guys like us are fight nerds, and we can appreciate regardless, but for the average person, they need to have that name recognition.
Yeah.
And they just don't. So, see how it comes out. One thing, before you let me go, I know you got to get with Tony here in a minute, but the last thing I'll leave you with is something to think of that I was watching this Saturday night with a lot of younger guys that I used to train with who were not into boxing at all. A lot of them were born back in the 80s, and by the time they came of age, boxing was kind of on a downswing, and MMA was the big thing. But they remember the legends of boxing, and they were fascinated about the stories of, like when Ali took on Sonny Liston, how he psyched him out, and all those great battles from the 60s through the 80s. And their question to me, and I couldn't answer this, and I don't know if you can, I want you to think about this, I don't want an answer tonight, but their question was, where are the MMA legends? The ones with the water cooler talk. Because everyone, even if you weren't into boxing back in the 80s, I know it was a little before your time, Rich, but I know you read a lot, you're quite familiar with that era.
Right.
And boxing was huge. I mean, everyone, the Holmes-Cooney fight was far more than a fight. Durant, Leonard, and on. You know the history of those days. And going back to the 70s and even 60s, or even back before that, the average person's heard of Joe Louis. The average person's heard of Rocky Marciano. Has the average person heard of Randy Couture, for example?
Right.
One of our well-known champs.
Randy's actually supposed to be appearing before Congress sometime soon, by the way. Talking about the problems with the sport and chances of changing or adopting the Muhammad Ali Act into MMA.
Yeah.
Which also transitions into the story of Dana White talking seriously about not only getting into boxing, but getting a promoter's license to do it.
We'll see how it goes. And I've been thinking about an answer for this to these guys. And maybe one answer is that, now you notice that there's no new real action in boxing.
Right.
There's no real outstanding household name. And I'm wondering if it's the fact that boxing is not on free TV at all, hardly anymore.
Right.
And back in the 80s, every weekend, there was some kind of action on all three major networks. In fact, at one time, there was a card on NBC. At the same time, there was one on CBS. And we were able to follow the fighters and get to know them more, and that's gone now. I mean, you just don't see much, and especially now that Friday night fights are over. Now it's all HBO, or else it's pay-per-view, and a lot of people don't have HBO.
Right.
So,
But I've had a couple guys, Mike Tyson and Vander Holyfield now still in it, but getting into the promotional side of it, but you know, really, Mike got out of it eventually, sold his stuff off to somebody else. And now Holyfield, you know, he supposedly got all this child support payments owed and he's in a ton of debt, so it makes you wonder, you know, how long he's going to last with it. Because he obviously doesn't have a good financial future or past.
Right, and even as recently as the 90s, again, Mike Tyson's a household name. Where are the MMA household names? it's just something I want you to think about. Maybe bring it up with Tony, too, and, you know, just to see what he thinks about it. Because I don't know if there's really a definitive answer to it.
Right.
But I don't like being out of answers, and these guys did stump me on that. And I'm wondering if we've just had a cultural shift away from combat sports, if they've become more niche-oriented, or if it's just the lack of television coverage.
Yeah, it could be. And they ought to actually try to get some of these old UFC guys, like Chuck Liddell, and some of these, you know, guys that we could consider legends, even me, having only been really watching since Chuck Liddell versus Rampage was my first main event UFC fight that I watched. Especially after Chuck got fired from his cushy UFC job, you'd think that Fox Sports would come in and say, hey, we got some work for you. And it just made me realize when you said that's part of it. Yeah, you know, you got all these young guys who are, some of them are champions right now, like Tyron Woodley and Daniel Cormier, but you really don't have a lot of legends. I mean, I guess you could kind of say that Michael Bisping is a little bit of a legend, but he hasn't been around that long. And then they pissed off Anderson Silva, so we might not ever see him fight again. And so there's that. But Chuck Liddell, Mark Coleman would be another great guy to do some of that. I know he's not in the best physical shape.
I would start with the Gracie family, Place in particular, because he was the first big name. But back when MMA first appeared on the scene, the Gracies were just, they were a lock on victory because no one knew the ground game to the extent they did. But then by 96, when Dan Severn was really the first wrestler to have any success. But then we seen, in 96, we seen the appearance of, you know, Mark Kerr, Mark Coleman. I mean, wrestling really started to make its presence felt back then.
Right.
But I would say that the Gracies really were big. And, of course, Ken Shamrock, I mean, he's been around forever. And yet there still aren't these kinds of legends.
Right.
And like I said, I'm wondering if it's the television coverage or if it's just a change in time. Maybe there's no real reason for it. Because you can imagine the importance of the heavyweight championship in boxing when President John Kennedy called Floyd Patterson and told him, you know, you got to beat this listed guy.
Right.
Well, can you imagine Barack Obama calling, calling Brock Lesnar like with Fedor going to Putin and asking for permission to come back.
I think part of it.
Now, I can picture him doing it with Trump, maybe, but not with Obama, you know, going to the White House. I mean, and so maybe it's just one of those cyclic things that boxing's faded out of the equation. I mean, they said the three biggest sports in the 1950s were boxing, baseball, and horse racing.
Right. Well, I think right now with mixed martial arts, it's developed to the point where, yeah, there might not be as many people participating as there is in boxing, but there's enough and there's a developing base of gyms and professionals that are teaching it and training people in it that you have an evolution of the sport to the point where there's also so many leagues out there. Nobody's fighting. Nobody's all put together in one pool, so you're not always guaranteed to be fighting the best. So you got some guys who are fighting lesser competition at the lower level, and then they come up to the higher level and they can't hack it, or vice versa. You know, these guys end up fighting themselves into a wall and they have to go down. and fight there. So even in Bellator, I mean, they're getting better and better with their quality of opponents, but you end up running out of guys to fight because it's just not big enough in so many ways. And it's like these guys that they always say, oh, all the big MMA future stars or in boxing and MMA are going to football. You know, the football players, you got to get them out of there, which is to some extent true. But then again, the other thing about the evolution of the sport is it makes it that much harder to be a dominant champion. And really the last one we saw was, current one, is Demetrius Johnson. And he doesn't dominate in just one thing. He really does it all. But in that respect, you can say it maybe be about more about the weight and the fact that not a lot of little guys do get into fighting. Even if they might get pushed around a lot, you know, sometimes they just, I guess, there's just not a lot of interest.
But, this is a whole other thing now. Demetrius Johnson is just has no interest within the MMA circles.
Right.
Let alone the average fan or the average casual fan. Is it who?
Yeah.
Hardcore MMA fans, there's nothing on the forums, but, oh, God, we got this, got to sit through this again. And then I think that disastrous PR movie made by refusing the TJ fight, the one fight everyone wanted to see.
Right.
But we didn't have it. But your point's well taken on that one, too. And it's just a fascinating question. So just mull it over a bit, and, you know, let me see what you think about it.
Hell yeah.
I just can't imagine the President Trump calling Stipe if he was going to be defending, if he's going to have a rematch with Rio. You know, you got to keep that belt in America. I just don't think MMA is quite there yet. And then, of course, boxing. We've seen somewhat of a revival recently, but we had these three mishaps. We had, in the first Kovalev Ward fight, we seen the decision. In the second Kovalev Ward fight, we seen the refereeing. And then the Triple G fight with Canelo, we seen that decision. So again, boxing's just back to its old tricks of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. I was trying to explain this. Excuse me for rambling on this, but I'm just full of this from having to explain to all these guys Saturday night about this, that it seems like there is no sport, like no activity that I've seen in my life that can shoot itself in the foot like boxing. Because we started to see, well, now we got the best fighting the best and all this, and there was all that momentum, and then the Las Vegas State Athletic Commission comes in and ruined three championship fights, in my opinion. Boom! Ruined. And so we're right back to square one again.
Right.
So, I don't know, maybe it's just always, these activities now are just doomed to be net sports, which I think is a shame, but what I think doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. Matters to our listeners.
I mean, I think it matters, but my opinion doesn't matter, I guess is what I meant to say. It just doesn't matter what I think. I mean, it's just, and I just don't know what the answer is. I mean, the whole Fox Sports deal, I guess, is expiring soon.
Right.
And there's talk about the future of that. I guess that would depend on the ratings. But if we can only get good ratings on these pay-per-view cards, what does that say about the future of everything?
Right. Well, I mean, they certainly have no shortage of talent, even with some guys leaving for Bellator. They seem to be able to hang on to their biggest stars, even though apparently Conor McGregor has been slated temporarily to fight Tony Ferguson there, who you were right about, by the way. That was another card we didn't talk about, but you predicted that one right on the dot in our last show, Tony Ferguson versus Kevin Lee. I had Kevin Lee, so I got it wrong. But, Tony Ferguson is supposed to be next in line, officially. And Conor McGregor says he won't come back until he gets an agreement that he can be co-promoter for his own fights. So.
Yeah, and Dana went into a profanity-laced tirade
Surprise.
Yeah, well, if you'd like to make $10 million, fine. You know? He says, every fucking one of you wants to make fucking $10 million, okay? It ain't gonna fucking work like that, all right? Fuck that idea. Yeah, he was actually laughing, but there was that tinge of frustration and anger about this whole thing.
Yeah.
So,
I gotta piss him off. I love it. I love seeing him pissed off. Makes me happy.
Yeah. You know, that every once in a while when I need a laugh during the day and I don't feel like watching a full 20-minute Three Stooges thing, I'll try to look up his speech on You Want to Be a Fucking Fighter. That was just absolute. And I don't think he was trying to be funny.
Right.
And maybe I just have a sick sense of humor that I can pull the humor out of about anything, but I just find that hilarious.
Yeah.
When he gets on there, it ain't about banging bods, it ain't about... So I'm going to ask you again.
I laughed my ass off when you sent me that email when I sent you the link to Dana explaining what he might do after the UFC, and he was talking about working with the students in the school system. You sent me back, do you want to be a fucking student?
Just a classic. Just never forget that. Well, go ahead and get Tony going. And hopefully we can get this together next week a little smoother. And do bring this topic up with Tony if you can think about it.
Sure.
And let him weigh in on this a little bit, too, because it dawned on me, the more I kept explaining this to these guys, I says, well, really, since Mike Tyson, who's been the household name in boxing?
Right.
How many guys knew who the heavyweight champ is now? This is not a question that I would have asked anyone in the 1960s through the 80s,
right,
especially in the 70s. It's just, what do you mean you don't know who it is? What's the matter with you? Everyone knew who Ollie was. Everyone knew who Smoking Joe Frazier was. Everyone knew who George Foreman was.
Exactly.
Everyone. I mean, now, think about it. Who knows? Well, we got five of them. Mm-hmm. So, but we don't know. No one's really caught the imagination. And interesting stuff. I don't mean to get so much sociology into this, but...
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's all part of it. All right, we'll see what Tony says, and we'll see what we got going next week, all right?
All right, thanks a lot. Good catching up.
All right, buddy.
Adios.